Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Just the craziest stuff, man. Like
zombie raccoons.
Zombie raccoons.
Oh, yeah. All sorts of stuff, yeah.
And that's the stuff that surprises me, because when you left, I thought, how weird is that to leave race off? How are we going to do that? But it's the most freeing and fun thing ever. I could be a horse that talks. I could be BoJack Horseman and play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Baby BoJack. And I got my next character. I'm good.
Touchstones like Rugrats, Muppet Babies, and D&D, Babies and Broadswords presents a unique take on fantasy gaming. You will enjoy my discussion with Jimmy and Jason of Even Footing Games. We dig into the origins of the concepts and how it changed over time. I get to play this game on the channel. Jason is running me and a few floorheads through an adventure. You can watch it live on Tuesday, August 23rd, or catch the replay on our YouTube channel. Speaking of content, this podcast, all of our live streams, and the hundreds of videos on YouTube are only possible because of the support on Patreon. Let's welcome some of our most recent floorheads and patron supporters. Big shout out to Steve Maroney, Matt Cherwin, Michael Underwood, William Musel, Robert Sabbath, and Justin Whitman. Because of them and the other 100 plus supporters, I'm here for you every week. Okay, sit back, relax, and enjoy my time with Jimmy and Jason.
Do you love to unplug and play games around the table? Greetings, friends and floorheads, to Tabletop Talk from Third Floor Wars. If you love tabletop gaming, you are in the right place. Listen as Craig delivers in-depth discussions and interviews with game designers, creators, insiders, and experts. Learn from the people making and playing the role-playing, miniature, and board games you love.
Howdy, friends. Craig here. My guests are from Even Footing Games, the creators of Babies and Broadswords. Now, my first guest is creative director Jason Cassidy. Jason has been a dungeon master for hire, a watermelon lumper, an international playwright, a professional educator, and many other jobs that will look great on the back of a book jacket. Jason, welcome to the third floor.
Craig, thank you. I'm glad to be here, and most of those are true.
That's a good intro, man. It's a good intro. And everybody here is like, oh, Craig definitely asked for the intro. He wouldn't write something that good. So one of the things I like to do, Jason, and it's pretty standard, unfortunately, so I'm sure you've been on other podcasts and had to go through this rigmarole, but I always like to find out everybody's origin story. Whenever we talk to people that are involved in creating these types of games, I think it's insightful to find out really when you first came across it. So there was a day that you didn't know you could roll dice and pretend to be other people, and then suddenly it was put in front of you for the first time. Can you take us back there?
Oh, back to the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to a little place called the 80s. Come with me, kids, on this long journey. No, the first time I remember coming across any sort of role-playing stuff, I was probably about 9 or 10, and I was over at a friend's house, and his dad had those some of the second edition, the AD&D books, probably from the 70s, 80s, the classic chainmail bikini, that fun artwork, the heavy metal stuff. And I was looking through those on the shelf going, what in the world is this? When his dad swooped out of nowhere and snatched them out of my hands and said, oh, those aren't for you. And that's when the allure started. I don't think I got dice in my hands, though, probably until about high school or so. And this was, this was early, mid-90s. So D&D still had a lot of that that allure of the satanic panic clinging to it. So it was very much something you did in dank basements and private. And you told all of your jock friends that you were playing poker. And so I didn't come out of the shadows, I suppose, probably until about college, maybe even a little after. So, but Shadowrun was our first game that we would play pretty regularly. Those old clunky editions that didn't work. And then but we moved on. Yeah, they were fun, but easy to break.
Yeah.
And I think that really kind of, that breaking the game was really what got me interested in making games, because I had so much fun finding the cracks in systems and exploiting them to my own needs. But yeah, it was like a lot of folks our age, it was done in the shadows, and then these kids don't know how good they have it when you can go to any store and find all manner of D&D stuff now. But
well, it's not only the availability, but the thing I talk about a lot on the show is it's easy to learn how to play these games now.
Yeah,
before, absolutely. We were on our own. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we had our books and we all played them wrong. And, you know, mm-hmm. I would be playing D&D one way, and then three doors down, they'd play a completely different way, even though we had the same books. So, Jason, as an adult now, looking back at high school, Jason, you know, starting to gronk these games and starting to play these games, do you have a sense of, you know, what may have, like, how did it get its hooks in you? What happened to you as a kid that made these, you know, stick around and now you're on My Stupid Podcast?
Sure. I think it was the opportunity to be in control of the story, of the narrative, or at least as a player, to be in control, at least of what my actions were. Being a kid in the kind of evangelical household I grew up in, there was a lot that I was not allowed to do. Wasn't always master of my own fate, as it were. Came from a pretty strict military upbringing. So the opportunity to play games that I wanted to play and act in a way that I wanted to act really drew me in. So, you know, when we first started playing, we didn't even have, gosh, the dice that we needed. I remember rolling D6s and just adding 8 to them, or, you know, okay, roll this one 3 times and subtract 4 from it, and that's your roll. Yeah. You know? But, so it really were, our early games really were narrative games. They were flipping a coin and saying, heads, you did this, tails, you did that. So, that narrative style really clung with me. And I think that's the games we were making now. And the games that I prefer to play now are really, they're more narrative heavy. They're more storytelling games as opposed to crunchy, crunchy mechanics, which don't get me wrong how they're placed. I could do character creation for hours and hours and hours and be happy sure. with it. But when it comes to playing the game, I want to tell a story. That's.
Yeah, I think it's fine to say, you know, there's multiple types of games and I can play any of them, but, mm-hmm. you know, I have a preference. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's no indictment on somebody who likes a different type of game by any stretch of the imagination. So, Jason, as I hear these origin stories, one thing that is somewhat common is hearing about I took a break, right? There's a period mm-hmm. of years mm-hmm. where I stopped mm-hmm. playing. Did that happen to you?
Yeah, probably from high school to, about late college, early grad school. So there were probably about 6 or 7 years where I wasn't playing.
Do you remember what brought you back?
Younger folks who wanted to play, actually. I was working. Cool. I was doing like a lot of community theater with some younger students when I was in grad school with undergrads and stuff like that. And they were always sitting around going, man, we want to start playing Dungeons & Dragons, because when I was doing theater at the time, this would have been like the early mid 2000s. It was a lot of improv groups, like big groups like up in New York would do D&D games as improv training. Like it became part of their training. So these were theater kids who wanted to do stuff like that. I was like, well, I've probably got some modules, you know, and some dice in a box in my basement at my parents' house. We could try it. And next thing you know, I was running games, you know, I was the second year of grad school running games for freshmen, you know, just all of us sitting around a table. So it was really finding that next generation who wanted to play and were kind of looking for someone to guide them into the hobby. And I was just lucky enough to be in the right place in the right time for them. So
you mentioned, Jason, that, you know, you like to break games, and that was kind of maybe the first clue that you might be making games at some point. But I would like to know, you know, so you're back, you're running these for the kids in college, you're back into the hobby again, you rediscover your love for it. Do you have a sense of when the voice started in your head that said, you know, I want to start making these things, or I'm doing more than just changing it for my table. I'm actually making true overhauls or starting brand new. Do you have a sense of when that bug hit you?
I was always homebrewing stuff. I mean, I think we all do that, especially if you DM for a while, you eventually get to the point where you've squeezed out the usefulness of a system. It's not exciting for you anymore. But as far as when I first wanted to start creating my own stuff, gosh, honestly, it might've been Babies and Broadswords. It just never occurred to me as something that I could, that I had the language for, that I had the sense of mechanics for, of just creating a whole system whole scale from the bottom up. And it really was, I mean, you know, as horrible as the pandemic was, I think there were a lot of us who found themselves with opportunity and time to do those things that they never thought they were available to do. So I was furloughed for 7 or 8 months. And my wife was like, you need to find a hobby or something, because you're driving the rest of us nuts. And it really was like, maybe I'll make a game, you know, I'll give it a shot. So yeah, I didn't even think that I had the pieces there until maybe just a couple of years ago.
So my second guest is lead playtester Jimmy St. James. Jimmy is a podcaster and musician with tons of gaming experience. His passion is board games, card games, dice games, and role-playing games. Jimmy, welcome to the third floor.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
So you get the same question, Jimmy. What is your origin story? There was a day you knew nothing about these games, and then suddenly it was put in front of you.
Well, I'm glad Jason went first. I got to think about this and mull it over in my head. No, I've told this story a million times. You know, I've been on a couple of other podcasts. It was the seventh grade. I distinctly remember it. I was in an accelerated type class for, you know, the nerdy kids. That was me. Right. Believe it or not, I was nerdy back then.
Don't you love that they like, the one thing that us nerdy kids definitely needed to be was separated and isolated. That was a great move when they did that, right?
Yeah. It made me feel really like part of the exactly. whole, you know, just very
I normal. Think it was for our own safety.
Probably.
So I was in this class where we got to pick what we wanted to do. And for the first weeks of the class, we were playing these goofy little games, and they were fun and they were interesting. They really made you think. And my friend Brian had just started playing Dungeons and Dragons. I did not know that. And he asked the teacher if we could play D&D. And the teacher said, if you keep a journal from your character's perspective, that's something I can grade. It's a creative writing thing.
Nice.
That's how it began. I immediately fell in love. We were playing AD&D. I'm back there with Jason in the 80s. Yep. It was a couple of years ago, and the system was far different. And for me, it was just instant true love. Immediately, it was the thing I had been looking for.
Now, you mentioned in your intro, you know, you also have a huge passion for board games and card games. Did this all happen at the same time, or was it role-playing games for a while, and then you know, found board games, found card games? I'm trying to figure out how they all shuffle together.
So first it was RPGs. First it was D&D, and then I played a couple of other games. I played Rifts. I played Shadowrun. I played
nice
a lot. I probably played 20 or 30 systems, you know, just trying to discover what was out there. And immediately I began homebrewing immediately, just from day one, because we were playing AD&D. It was such a clunky game and it needed so much love, and it was so easy to mod just right away. And then in high school, I made a board game, and that was just, it was silly. It was kind of a Monopoly style thing. And then I challenged myself on the next project to create an RPG. And that was my first, I think it was about 16.
Nice.
And I created a very simple RPG then, and, you know, a monster was born, and my friends have had to put up with me ever since. New versions of D&D, new versions of these games, new this, new that. And, you know, now I've actually gotten a chance to work in the field for a little while, and it's really fun. And when Jason approached me, it was like, yes, you've got the stuff, man. You've got the stuff. He doesn't know that he had the tools, but this guy had the tools.
So, Jimmy, it's funny to me because, you know, there's millions of people that have played RPGs. And of those millions, there's a subset that, you know, creates their own worlds, modifies the games, you know, adjusts things for the table. And then there's people that take it another step, right? And we hear from Jason that it was kind of the pandemic that kind of pushed him to say, you know, I'm really going to go off book here and start making stuff whole cloth. You started when you were 16. What is adult Jimmy looking back say, you know, what drove that? Where is that impetus to not just play, but to make?
Well, I noticed that the D20 system, it wasn't called that then, but, you know, AD&D and then second edition, it wasn't really great for doing other things. It didn't translate well. Everything was classes and races. And it became really goofy. If we tried to put it in a modern setting, it was unwieldy for sci-fi. And it didn't translate. It was D&D at its heart has always been a heroic, you know, kill the dragon, slaughter the demon, save the princess, be the big hero, where I wanted something else. And that's why immediately I started modding that game, and it wasn't enough. I went to a percentile based system and then a D10 based system. And then I found dice pools, and it was over once I realized all of these different styles. And I just started playing with mechanics, throwing them into a blender and seeing what worked for this style game, what worked for that style game, what worked for this board game. And it's funny because board games have these really cool mechanics that RPGs just don't take advantage of. And they're ripe for the picking. They're right sure. there being used. And mass, and people love them. And I love to put all those things together in weird ways that just work. I'm a numbers guy. I love numbers. I love futzing around with numbers. They're just beautiful.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Jimmy, because I'm just now starting to notice a little bit of the bleed. We're starting to see some concepts that are very, you know, because the board game boom happened before the RPG boom did. We've been in the golden age of board games for a long time now, but you're starting to see some of the innovations bleed over. And what comes to mind is things like Blades in the Dark, which have some really tight interconnected mechanics like you would expect, you know, in a Euro style game. The way that Forbidden Lands handles travel is very board game-ish and not in a bad way, but it's something that it'll be, to your point, Jimmy, it'll be interesting to see how much that happens and there is a very, very fertile field for RPG designers to pick from in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it can be a lot of fun to see these other mechanics integrated in a fun way. So you're not just always rolling a D20 or just always doing the same thing over and over. And it's a percentage-based system no matter how you slice it.
Right. Exactly. And it's kind of neat too. Now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, talking out loud about it, we've seen the other influence the other way, right? So we've seen the influence of RPGs and board games.
Huge.
But it'll be interesting to see if it bounces back at all. So guys, the Insider Insight series is my opportunity to sit down with designers, developers, artists, writers, and creators and learn how they approach their work. I try and understand their process, inspiration, and the methods for crafting their creations. And that's what we're going to do with Jimmy and Jason. Let's start off, Jason. You know, what brought you guys here is the game we've already talked about, which is Babies and Broadswords. And that's what we'll focus on. So, Jason, for the three people that are listening that have never heard of Babies and Broadswords, can we give everybody just a kind of an overview of the concept or the premise?
Sure. Babies and Broadswords, the overall theme premise is all of the players are toddlers in a magical haunted orphanage. And it's a D6 system, so it's very light on crunch, very heavy on narrative. It's very tongue-in-cheek. The idea is you're four, but you know everything you know as a grown-up. So there's a lot of metagaming involved in that sense. But it's very much navigating the foibles of childhood as an adult. It's your brain in a tiny gnome body. What do you do with that? So it's very big on storytelling. It's very big on collaboration between the sitter and the players. The sitter is what we call our game master. And I think everyone who's played it has had a blast. I think it's just a setting and a system that really lends itself to having fun around a table, which, you know, we can talk about this more later, but more and more, a lot of the games that are coming out are getting darker and grittier, I've noticed.
The return of the 90s.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, boy, I'm trying not to say anything that's going to get me in trouble.
Nobody listens to this podcast. That, just go ahead, Jason. Good.
Oh, Lord. But part of the impetus of creating such a silly game was there were a few of us who were working for a different game studio. I will not say any more than that. But the direction that the game was going was darker and grittier and meaner and just unpleasant. And it would really, who wants to play this game? You know, who, I mean, I besides Jimmy. Yeah, I know you do. you know, when did role-playing games stop being fun? And so that's when we wanted to kind of go back to that, you know, let's skip the 90s. Let's forget the 90s ever happened.
Right.
Let's go back to the Saturday morning cartoon Dungeons and Dragons days. You know, let's go back to being silly and making a story together.
Yeah. Yeah. Muppet Babies is
exactly.
Yeah.
which was a huge influence. Absolutely.
I suspected that was the case. So before we kind of get into the origins of where this came from, I'm very curious about, you know, how things were for you, Jimmy. So when you first either heard the concept or maybe saw some of this, you know, you and I, before Jason came on, before we started recording, we're kind of, you know, talking about games we love and stuff like that. And obviously you rose your hand when you said, I love dark games. What was your initial reaction when Jason explained to you, you know, this idea?
Well, I was also working for the same dark, gritty company, and there were some communication things going on, and I was having a hard time connecting with the right people. And I thought, I want to get to know somebody who I can relate to and say, hey, what do I need to do to get the access to the drive? What do I need to do to see these things? And so I thought, I'm just going to make friends with someone. And Jason was doing Babies and Broadswords through a mutual contact, and he needed players and told me about it. And I thought, well, there's people on this podcast that are working and getting stuff done, and maybe I'll get to know them and see what they think. And then we just kind of, I didn't think it was for me, to be honest. I thought it was more, well, it's Babies and Broadswords. It's a game this guy wrote. I want to see what it's about. I want to see what he has, what he's bringing to the table. And then when I met Jason, I could see right away, you know, his passion for the game, his love for role playing. And it was taking me back to that. You know, I use a lot of minis, and I play online on Roll20 a lot. So going back to Theater of the Mind, just a very pure style of gaming, a lot of laughter, a lot of silliness. And I was wrong. It was for me. I was dead wrong. This was the game that I was missing. And, the system was rocky at first, but, you know, it wasn't about the system at all. It was about the things we were doing and the tongue-in-cheek jokes. And you all get a chance to make fart jokes, and you all get a chance to poop your pants. And it was just hilarious. And the people were good. And I got a chance to work with them. And he asked me to Jason, weeks later, hey, do you want to come on the team with us? Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, okay. I don't want to do this other thing anymore. I don't feel welcome there. I don't feel like I've been taken seriously there. And I felt like that way at other places I've worked as well, doing similar stuff. And I just didn't think that was going to be the case. And I was right. Once I came to Even Footing Games, right away, there was a different atmosphere. It stayed that way the whole time. And I feel privileged to be on this team now and privileged to be a part of this project.
So, Jason, and we've kind of hinted at it, but, you know, so the pandemic hits, you're driving your family crazy, and they're like, you got to get a goddamn hobby. Like, this has got to stop.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So there's all kinds of games you could have made, mm-hmm, Jason. Mm-hmm. Where does this start? So if we go to, you know, it's 20 years later, I go to the Babies and Broadswords Museum, and I go through all the exhibits. I'm going to go to the first exhibit that says this is where it happened.
Right.
So where did the seed first plant?
Well, if you're going to the Babies and Broadswords Museum, I'm hoping you didn't pay admission, because it's going to be a very small museum. But honestly, it was a bullshitting session for... And everything is connected. So it was a podcast. It was a Real Play podcast that I was on. And we were looking for something to do during the Patreon. So all the play for our Patreon, I should say. So all the players were like, oh, we're just goofing around. Like, oh, what if we were, I don't know, a bunch of babies. What if we were all hamsters? What if we were, you know, trying to escape from a pet store? You know, just stupid ideas. And babies is the one that I really latched onto. We started making up silly character names and doing spoofs of D&D feats. And so after about, you know, maybe 45 minutes, an hour of us just joking around, I'm like, screw it. All right. I will be back in 2 weeks. I'm going to make this game. I don't care if it's playable. I don't care if it works, but we need something for the Patreon. Okay. That's what this will be then. And so that's what it was. It became the Patreon, the very, very early rough version became the Patreon game. And we would play once a month and you know, six people would listen to it, however many were patrons for that particular show. But when it came time for even footing to put itself together, you know, we were trying to figure out what to do. And it really was like, well, I've got this little thing that I've been playing around with for 4 or 5, 6 months. The bones are there. I know it's workable because we basically been play testing it. Do you want this to be our first thing so that we can get our name out there and get our feet wet and get used to working together?
Yeah.
Because there was 9 or 10 of us at the beginning. And while half of us worked together in one way, you know, the other half hadn't met. And there was, you know, how that usually works. And so it really gave us all a chance to kind of see what the other people were capable of. So now the bigger games that we're starting to work on now, you know, we have a lot more of an idea of you're best suited for this. You do this best. You and I work together best when we do this. So coming with a silly idea that was born of a half thought out idea, we were able to build something better out of it. But yeah, it came out of a bullshit session. It came out of 30 stupid ideas. And this was just the one that my brain said, you could do something with that. You know, the opportunities for poop jokes are rife in that.
Yeah. We've definitely got a theme there, don't we? So, you know, Jimmy, it's, you know, it's one thing for me to hear this coming from Jason, but, you know, you have a bit of an outsider's view, right? You kind of see it and you may not have been there at the very beginning necessarily. You caught it as the journey began. And as somebody who has played a ton of different games, what stands out to you as far as, you know, how the game matured? So when you first got your hands on it and looked at it and at that point a raw form versus what people can buy and play right now, what really stands out for you as far as the evolution of the game?
Well, there were a couple of things. We were, since Jason was running a theater of the mind, which I think is very Jason centric, what he likes to do, we thought, well, we're going to need maps. Like, we're going to need maps for this book because some people are going to want maps. And we started thinking about maps. And I think we even looked at some people who were making commissions and it just struck me like, this is not a map game. This is not, I don't want to have a battle map that could have come out of a D&D book or out of something else, because that's what it looked like when I would put one together, or when someone else would put one together. It just looked like a D&D map to me. It could be any place. It could be a tavern with a teddy bear on the floor, really. And I just thought, you know, what we really need is to make this setting come alive. And I just don't think the maps are going to do it. So we came up with a very simple range system, which is flailing range, flinging range, and spitting range. Is that, that's, yeah, or I got them out of order, but yes.
That's it.
And it's just so much more fun, and it still keeps it a narrative game where we're theater of the mind. And that's, I think that was important that we made that distinction. But at the same time, we brought someone really important to the team to do that setting art. And that was big. And I think at the same time, we were adding stuff to the game and it was growing. We added quirks and we added, we changed some of the names of things that were kind of difficult to say or, you know, maybe for a kid, maybe difficult to say or difficult to comprehend. Some of it's still precociousness. I don't know if a 6-year-old's going to latch on to that, but I think that was the time when the game really grew, and it happened very quickly, almost overnight. We had a 37-page PDF that just started growing and growing and growing. And next thing I knew, we were doing like 20 sit down and edit sessions where we were just, you know, massaging the numbers in still. And it happened, like I said, it happened very quickly at that point.
So Jason, as I talk to creators and I start to learn this process and we pull the curtain back and just see, you know, how the sausage is made, something I think that I keep hearing, and I'll be interested if it applied here, is that it's not a just a gradual incline from the beginning to its finish, that I hear there's plateaus where you just have these huge like spurts of creativity or a small change happens. So in your mind, Jason, looking back at it, what were some of those big milestones or those big jumps?
I mean, the biggest jump was just putting in front of other people who were engaged in not just playing, but in making something out of it. I'm not a numbers guy. I had a very simple... It was originally a D4 system because I guess I wanted to make it difficult on myself. but I think the idea was they were closest to Legos to step on. And I don't know. I had some setting idea in my head, but I don't know. Who knows? So getting it in front of actual numbers, people who could make the numbers work, was a huge, not just in moving the game forward, but making me kind of, it was a lesson for me to understand. It's like, oh, okay. So, you know, there is a balance, not just in how the numbers fit together, but how the numbers react to one another and how this mechanic fits to that mechanic. And that was a big milestone. And then honestly, we had another big burst of creativity. Seeing a lot of the artwork really got me going again. Seeing some of our character work by Allison, our character artist, and then my Jack, our background and settings artist, really juiced me. And then I think the last thing that kind of helped me get over the that final hump of getting the book where I wanted it to be was a simple name change of a skill. Honestly, we have these sub skills, and we called it Kawaii before because I was like on a big Japanese kick for some reason. And it was driving everybody nuts. It's like we could not figure out what to call this one sub skill, and it's such a small thing in the scheme of things. But we're like, what is just how do you what's a skill that just says that you're a cool kid? And Jack says, why don't we just call it cool? And for some reason that clicked everything. After once that final piece locked in, then it was like I can finish writing this thing now. You know, it's like I have the pieces. I needed someone else to name them for me. And so that was the whole collaborative thing. It really was. It was seeing all of the disparate and different pieces and everybody's strengths working on the project together. Their creativity, their influence would spur me on to the next step. So those are just a few of the milestones that I can think of. But yeah, it could be the smallest thing. It could be the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, Jason, because I hear that a lot, and I find that so fascinating, like how just one little change, right, a change of a name or going from a D4 to a D6, suddenly just all the pieces come together. Now, and you got to be honest with me, was it hard watching people put their fingerprints all over your baby? Was that hard to let go?
You know what the hardest for me, and because I'm a writer, I'm the flavor guy. Like that's what I was doing on the last game. It was like they were like, "Do you want to work on mechanics?" I'm like, no. You do that, and I'll make it look cool. You know, that was my job. So anytime it came to messing with the mechanics or changing the numbers or going from the D4 to the D6 or whatever the case may be, I was like, hands off. I was like, all right, absolutely. You guys are better at this than I am. But anytime somebody said, you know, let's change this joke or maybe this, no. Like that was the sort of things I would fight. Like I would eventually, the whole ethos behind Even Footings was that we were going to rule by consensus. So if the group decided this joke was too dark or this might be misconstrued in a way, then okay, I'll change it all. But there was very little I fought for to keep, but that was when I would be really precious about my stuff. It was like, not my beautiful words, don't touch those.
I knew that's where you were going.
But
I'm like, oh gosh, here we go.
Yeah, the second anybody started futzing with the numbers or changing artwork around, or even, you know, making the skills or the axe or whatever fit in a different way, I was okay with that. But
yeah,
by God, leave my writing alone. That's all I have.
That's funny. So we're going to take a break in just a minute. We're going to get into some of the nitty gritty. Before we do, one thing that kind of popped in my head, and it's a very clever game, guys. But the one thing I was thinking about is, you know, when I do actual plays on the channel, before we ever go live and, you know, during session zeros, which we typically do offline, and we talk about lines and veils and things like that. And a very common line or veil that we hear is children, right? And putting children in danger and yes. things like that. How did you guys reconcile that here? Or does it just, it's not even a factor?
Well, I think the way we've reconciled it is we don't have like life points or hit points or anything like that mm-hmm. at all. We have what Jason calls misfortunes. And those are unfortunate things that happens to your toddler. Like you get a tummy ache, you get some ouchies, things like that. And you take too many of those and you go on a timeout. You have just simply step away from the table for a few minutes until you've had some time to think about what you've done or until you've used the restroom. And then you come back to the table, you roll a new threshold and you jump right back into the action. So we're not in the business of killing babies. That's not
right.
No, that was hard and fast rule. No baby death. Yeah.
Rule number one. Yeah.
Rule number one.
Now, I realize there's going to be some homebrew. Mm-hmm. We can't be responsible for that.
Right. Go play. But it's cult. Not in the system. Right. And the things that the kids run into are often they're anthropomorphic enemies. It's the imaginary monster who lives in the toilet. It's the thing under the bed. You know, it's very rarely a real thing that could actually cause them any damage. And so I think keeping it strictly in the realm of imagination, and that's a big part of the game as well. It's like, are these things happening to these kids actually, or is this all a game that they're imagining? It really is that line of you know, Rugrats, of Muppet Babies. It's like, how much of this is real and how much of this is just them playing a game? And they've all decided that when I say fireball, you're going to pretend that you're on fire, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So we avoided it completely. We made it not an option. You know, these kids get knocked down, but they get right back up again.
That's very cool. So, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back from this break, we're going to talk about some more details. We're going to get into the mechanics, how it plays. I want to really dig into some of the play testing. As you guys know that, listen, I'm very fascinated by that process and the impact it has on the game. And we'll figure out whether this is a game that you would like or not. We'll be right back.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Are you a tabletop RPG player that is considering becoming a game master? Are you a veteran GM that is always looking for different ways to improve your games? GM Mastermind is an RPG podcast that tackles topics catering to the art of game mastering.
But Craig, there are a lot of RPG podcasts that do that.
Perhaps, but GM Mastermind has the brain trust. It's a guest panel made up of 2 to 3 game masters from different backgrounds and experiences that share their personal insights on a particular topic. This keeps the conversation fresh, diverse, and insightful from one episode to the next. So head over to gmmastermind.com or subscribe to GM Mastermind wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
So, you know, Jason made it very clear kind of what his lanes are, where he really feels like he contributes and where he struggles. So when you got the dumpster fire, which was the mechanics, Jimmy, at that time, what did you do to fix it? But in all seriousness, though, can we get into a little bit of the details on the mechanics?
Well, right away, it was a lot like something I was already working on, like a pet project of my own that I was going to make and give away for free just to find someone else to work for, to be honest. And I've done things like that in the past and been successful. And so I was actually making something called 8-bit emulator, where I would take 8-bit video games and turn them into RPGs. And I was working on the Metroid project, and I made this really fun D10 based system that was exactly, it was based on the rule of threes, just like Babies and Broadswords. There were three main skills. We see those three main abilities and or skills or whatever you want to call them over and over in games. And I wanted there to be as few roles as possible. And so as soon as I saw Babies and Broadswords, I thought, well, this is a D6 or a D4, because it was D6 and it was D4. And I was like, this is just kind of a similar thing. And when I played it, I didn't think about the rules at all, not as far as the system goes. I just thought, how easy is this? I like that. I'm just role playing. But as soon as I came onto the team, I got to read the book a little bit more deeply. I'm going to use air quotes on the book a little bit more deeply. And so a few things started jumping out at me. It's like, well, that could be problematic, or we may need more here. And I noticed there was no background, or there was really nothing to describe your character other than your class.
Because there's three, Jimmy.
There's the three. And I,
give,
I
him
wanted,
a, give him a second.
I wanted a little bit more. And yeah. And as soon as I started playtesting it, it was the roles were very easy to win almost every time. And we went from rolling for your stats in the beginning, just roll a D6 and assign that to your adventurousness, roll a D6, assign that to your precociousness. Same for the cuteness. We went from that to a numbers array. And I think that's when it started to become a little bit more, I don't want to say sophisticated, but
right.
It started working better. It really did. And then the rules were still very easy to win. And we just made it a little bit harder. We scaled down some of the numbers that were bonuses, and we put some limits on things. And that's when I felt like the game started clicking with my playtesters. My initial run, I ran with 41 people. Well, over however many weeks, I don't
right,
remember.
Right, right. Still, it's a ton of playtesters. That's amazing.
It was one giant game. Yeah.
It was one giant game with 5-year-olds, and it somehow worked. But it was 41 people, and I heard all sorts of weird critiques and criticisms that didn't make any sense. But there were starting to become things that I heard over and over again. And Kauai, yep. It's funny that Jason touched on that earlier. That was one of them. And I was a little bit hesitant to even bring that to the table and say, because I liked it. I thought it was cute. I thought it was kind of almost funny. And the rest of the game had that. And I just, well, it fits. But that was the one thing that people were like, I don't even know what that is. I have no idea what that, I can't even relate to that word. And that was one of the things that I brought to Jason, you know, after the fact. And that was one of the things I don't think that he liked hearing that he mentioned earlier, you know, these things, I don't like the way you worded that or something, but the rules stayed fairly similar. We just changed the die. We changed lots of the names of things. And then we made the roles a little harder until it started really clicking and humming. And didn't take long for that process either, honestly, maybe 6 weeks.
So definitely with Babies and Broadswords, obviously, but other games that you've played, I'm interested to get a sense of, you know, it's very easy for us to say, you know, it started clicking, right? It started coming together. And it's a phrase where, you know, when we hear it and when we say it, we all know what that means. But I want to know what it feels like, right? So how do you get a sense, Jimmy, or do you just pick up a sense of you're going, yeah, this is working. This was a good change, or a change is made and you play test and you're like, yeah, no, we got to do something else. Is it an instinct? Is it experience? What is it?
I think for me, since I've played so many systems, that I get a feel of what, you know, whether things are making sense when we make these roles. Because with Babies, it always succeeding didn't make sense to me, or always failing wouldn't make sense either. But there had to be like this really fine line where it felt good and we started saying fail forward at some point. And that, I think that was even as the book was finishing or as we were going to printing, and we kind of changed our philosophy of failure, and it sort of made everything okay. But we wanted the game to not feel like, and I know that the tougher we made it, the more some of the other players and designers were kind of like, ah, but we really want this to, I don't want people to fail at things this often. And
yep.
We really want it to be fun. And it's like, well, if you can't fail, then why are we rolling dice? You know? So for me, clicking is just that point where the rolls make sense. And it was instinct for me all the way. And the failing forward idea just sold it. It absolutely sold the whole thing that just because you fail a roll, you don't necessarily fail. You maybe attract attention while you're trying to do this thing when you're being sneaky, but you've still done it. But now there's an adult after you or a janitor. You've still accomplished jumping across the river of poo, but your legs landed in it on the other side and you got covered from the waist down. So we still kept pushing the narrative forward by what the player wants to do. And honestly, like, I play a lot of narrative driven games. Even my Dungeons and Dragons game is far more narrative than many of the other games I've sat at other people's table, just far more narrative. In my games, people aren't saying, can I get a stealth? That doesn't happen very much. Or can I get I want to investigate. And that's, you know, it's more, I pick up the bookshelf and look behind it, or I move the skull out of the way. But now in Babies, it's more, we just let the player tell their story regardless, sort of thing. And we continue to allow that player some agency to figure out maybe how they fail a little bit. And if they don't want to, they just throw the ball back in the sitter's court. And then the sitter tells you how you fail forward.
So Jason, as they were messing around with these mechanics and, you know, they would bring stuff back to you and you would, you would try it out, you would read it. Was there anything that you really had a strong reaction to, either that you fell in love with as soon as it was put in front of you, or something they put in front of you and you had a strong reaction like, no, I may not be great at those mechanics things, but I know that's a bad idea.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of if I had any strong reactions to anything. I think I was a little hesitant at first to actually lose the D4 system, because I felt like that was just it was novel enough that it might be an interesting selling point for folks. But once I played with the D6, and once we, you know, once our numbers folks, Jimmy and Garrett, who was our other big numbers guy, explained it to me, and I actually got to play and see how, I was like, okay, that makes sense. The whole failing forward idea, I think, was Jack, who was one of our artists again. That made sense to me. It's like the second he said, well, it's not, why does it have to be fail or pass? Why can't it be fail but? And when he said that, it was like, absolutely. There's no absolute. There's yes, it would be fail but. Because if the whole idea is that we are creating a story, and to some extent, this is a game that, in at least its very early stages, was for families and kids, you know, and it's and it still very is a family friendly game, but kids don't want to be stopped in their tracks. You know, they want to keep moving forward. So once the fail forward kind of became the norm, that changed how I was running the game, because I had been going easy on folks because I wanted them to succeed in roles. But now that we added the whole, no, you can still get, you know, accomplish your thing, but I still get to mess with you a bit. Awesome. Let's do that. That sounds good.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think there's a lot of systems who are kind of borrowing that fail forward. And I think it's going to become more and more the norm, honestly, as games move into their next stage, as we get more and more narrative and less away from the numbers. It's definitely a beautiful mechanic. It's a beautiful idea for keeping a story moving and for keeping a game going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it
there's an argument to be made that the Bakers first, you know, brought it to the forefront with, you know, Apocalypse World and Powered by the Apocalypse, that concept of you know, degrees of failure and degrees of passing. And it existed before that, but that's really where it got codified. And yeah, it's spreading like wildfire. I don't know if either of you guys have ever played the Fantasy Flight Star Wars system with a narrative dice that also does a great job of kind of that degrees of success and degrees of failure, which I am like you guys, I gravitate towards versus a strict, you know, pass fail. So Jimmy, as you are doing the play testing, you know, part of the reason why we love these games is because, you know, every table's different, right? Everybody gronks the game different. You change one player and the style of play can vary. But you have a very interesting, you know, 10,000 foot view with having seen it played so many times through so many people. And I'd like to give the listeners an idea of kind of the range of play that you've seen. So if we were to, you know, lay everybody out from left to right in whatever order we decide to put everybody in, can we get an idea of like the range of style of play that you saw?
Absolutely. How pejorative do we want to get here, Jimmy?
I got to play with some interesting people, mostly people I knew personally that play. I have a guild, a D&D guild that we run all sorts of games online and in person through. So I had them to bounce ideas off of and play with as well. And I found that, you know, they're seasoned gamers and they approach this game very differently than the people I want to approach this game. You know, I don't think that the guys who are playing these grim, dark games with me are going to necessarily pick this up on the bookshelf, except that it's my book and I'm their buddy.
Right.
So, like, it was important because I really wanted to get their thought process. It was just like playing D&D with them, but we were babies. And so they were trying to break the system and I welcomed that. And they really showed me, you know, how the system, where the weaknesses were, because immediately they knew, like, okay, well, you're up. This is going to be an adventurousness thing. And it's like, well, you're just going to pass. I have to set all the difficulties so freaking high that it just doesn't make sense that, you know, and that's how we started bringing it down, was through them, but also playing with families who, you know, dad played D&D and no one else in the family plays at all. And, or maybe dad played a little bit of D&D 10 years ago or 20 years ago or something. And I played with people like that as well, where it was me telling a story and them, you know, picking A, B, or C, and then just I keep talking, where I am telling them what their characters are doing rather than them. They're just making decisions like it was a choose your own adventure type book. And but then when that happened, it made me nervous because the games would be 35 minutes long as opposed to an hour and 20 minutes or 2 hours. And it's just me pushing them along. And I might as well have been reading a book, in my opinion. But when we get to the end, they're like, wow, that was really cool. And I'm like, and so the more I did it with people like that, the more comfortable I got with it. But every time you get that kind of lump in your chest, like, am I doing this right? Is this working? I can hardly tell half the time because that other far end, it's just me talking and them going, yes, or okay,
yeah,
seven, you know? Yeah. And so the fact that they enjoyed it, and then I got to play with some of those people again and again over the course of several weeks and watching them grow into the characters and start doing baby voices. It was super cool. Like, I thought it was going to be mostly kids coming to it, but there were a lot of dads who were like, you know what? Okay. It was fun. And definitely the moms, all of the moms were, this is so cute. This is so much fun. I thought it was going to be difficult. And it's just not. As long as I have somebody I can react with at the table, I started finding I'm going to put plants at the table with these playtest groups, people that I know how to play. They know how to role play. And once I could interact with them, with these people that had never really played, I could start seeing magic happening in 10 minutes. And that was super cool to watch that. It was just like, I just, It was like we talked about the very first question you asked, what shone the light in your eyes? What caught you? And I could see a 7-year-old getting caught in my headlights and them.
Lifer.
Yeah. Like, can I see that book? Like, yeah, here you go. And see them like reading. And
yeah.
You know, like they're
like, you are me.
Yeah. It was super cool. And
That's the best.
Because we had a little bit of art at that time. And I thought the most important thing to bring when I play test is the art. We didn't have a lot. So what I did bring, I was shoving it in their face. Like, you need to see this world. You need to see these babies. You need to picture this.
Well, it gives them a foundation to jump off of, right? In order to be able to have kind of at least an initial shared understanding to then do whatever the hell they end up doing. So, Jason, another thing that fascinates me is and I have yet to come up with a term for this yet. There's probably already is a term, so I don't know why I struggle with it. But I feel like the release of a game has these concentric circles, right? So mm-hmm. it's just you in your head at first.
Yep.
And then you expose it to a couple people and the circle gets a little bit bigger. And then, more people get their hands on it. Then you start playtesting and the circle jumps, right? There's a whole lot of people that are playing your game that never did before. And then the next big circle is people that are playing your game and you're not there. And that's a completely different thing, right? So nobody from the game company is there telling them this is how we play.
Right.
And what I find interesting is the boomerang that comes back from that. So have either, Jason, either you or Jimmy been surprised by what has come back to you? Have you seen people do things with this game that surprised you? People that have said things about the game that you didn't anticipate?
Jimmy might have a better answer than I did. I know Jimmy just played pretty recently with one of our Patreons who has been running his own games without us for his friends and family. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to play in that game, but I'd be interested to see what he brought to the table having run the games themselves.
Yeah, I have seen some really interesting things. And the fellow Ryan, it was, I think for us playing with Ryan, it was a joy because it's different when I play Babies and Broadswords with the creators than I do with anyone else. Because, we have the podcast and we've all listened to it and dissected the book and dissected the podcast. And so we're all really on the same page. Anyone from even Footing sits down with me, we're at Lady Chastity's. We all know what to expect. We all know how to move the story forward. But the people, like when we did it with one of our Patreons, he clicked right into that, I felt like, because he's been listening to the podcast. He's been running the games. He knew exactly what he wanted to play. And that it wasn't surprising. I mean, it may be a little surprising to see someone so fluent and have no problems, but I've seen a couple of people who just get games do that as well. I had the chance to run a demo at a local store here, and one of the players used every ability on her sheet.
Wow.
And she was role playing and she like was just awesome. But the most surprising things I've seen is when I open up, we talk about race, something in the book that we don't have race in the book. And we have a little disclaimer. We don't want to have any sort of I don't remember how it's worded, Jason, but we just didn't want to have that argument. We didn't want to have that thing there. So you can be whatever race you want. It's not going to affect your abilities at all. That's a stereotypical thing. We don't want to include that. So when you tell a kid you can be anything you want, I've had baby aliens, baby Chewbacca.
Great.
I've had baby Yu-Gi-Oh characters that I don't know what they are.
Yeah.
Baby robots, just the craziest stuff, man. Like
zombie raccoons,
zombie raccoons.
Oh yeah. All sorts of stuff. Yeah.
And that's the stuff that surprises me, because when you let, I thought that how weird is that to leave race off? How are we going to do that? But it's the most freeing and fun thing ever. I could be a horse that talks. I could be BoJack Horseman and play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Baby BoJack. And I got my next character. I'm good.
Believe it or not, we're making shit up. So let's go ahead and do that.
Let's just do it all the way. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So Jimmy, I'm going to put you in the role of game sommelier, right? So, you're at the local, game store, you see somebody wandering the shelves, and you know, what would they say to you that would make you go, I've got the game for you, let me show you Babies and Broadswords? So what would they, what type of gamer would love this? So is there other games that they like? If you like this game, you'd like this game. Give me a sense of what would draw people to this game.
Well, it's funny because I was a sommelier back in a former life. So the same person that I would recommend a sweet Riesling to, they're like, you know, I've played some games, but I really haven't found anything that was interesting for me. And like, there's so much. It's intimidating that I have to learn all these rules. The book is like 400 pages. I'm not going to read that to play a game. To them, I would say, well, check out Babies and Broadswords. It's a lot more fun. It's going to be a comedy and it's going to be an adventure where you get to be the character. You get to be a baby again. And if that doesn't interest you, then I don't know. Then maybe Babies and Broadswords is not for you. But anyone who hasn't role played before and maybe they've played some simpler games, and I can say, well, this is simpler than Monopoly. I can use that bar. Oh, well, I've played Monopoly. I showed up and learned how to play and finished a game in a couple of hours. And that wasn't a big deal. And I can say, well, Babies and Broadswords, that'll take half that time.
Very cool.
You can be at the table in 5 minutes with a character in hand, role playing in 5 minutes.
So, Jason, the last question I always ask all my guests, and I find this to be a very interesting question, is we're talking about a thing that you're very passionate about, right? You guys have been living and breathing this game for a long time, but this has not been the only piece of your life. So I'd be curious, what out there that you have not created are you loving right now? Is there a game or a book or a movie, or are you binge watching something, or you can't stop, you know, logging off of something? What are you just consuming right now that you are just voracious for?
It's a game that came out a couple of years ago. Well, I think the beta came out a couple of years ago, and it's just kind of been released pretty recently, called Wildermyth. It's a computer game. You can find it on Steam. And the premise is it's a tactical battle map, but it's kind of set up like an old school RPG. It feels very much like the way the story progresses is, you know, it's very whimsical, and your characters are all given the choices. Like, you come across a mysterious stone. Do you grab the rock or do you let it go? And if you grab it, oh my gosh, now your character is part rock, and now you've got a character who's part rock. So it's a very simple seeming game, but it's just, the artwork is delightful. It's set up like they're almost paper dolls, so everything is two-dimensional. Nice. And it kind of has a very board gamey look and feel to it, but it's lovely writing, and it's so whimsical, and it's so easy to pick up, and just you play a board and you move along. And you know, I'm 42. I've got two kids. I got a full-time job. I don't have time anymore to sit in front of the computer or the PlayStation for 9 hours. I want to, but I don't have time anymore. So if I can just drop into something that is both light and sweet and fun and well-crafted, and the mechanics work and the game runs smoothly. So Wildermyth, it's on Steam. It's very affordable. If you like a game that is both well written and engaging to play, it's sucked up a lot of hours. It's
oh, really that's great.
It's
that's
delightful. Great. Yeah.
Same question for you, Jimmy. What are you just loving right now?
I'm loving the Power by the Apocalypse game, Avatar Legends. It's just fantastic. It's a beautiful book. The Power by the Apocalypse system and philosophy is fantastic. It's what I've been trying to say for decades, that you know, what you want to do is more important than what it says in the book. And the book is, not only is it just encouraging you on one page, it's encouraging you with the die rolls, and it's encouraging you with the way the system works to role play. It's encouraging you to feel things through your character and react to stimuli. And I love that. It's fantastic. And I can't wait to play more Avatar Legends. I can't wait to play more Powered by the Apocalypse games. Plain and simple.
Well, if you if at any point you need some ideas, I reach out. So the first one I want you to look at, if you have not looked at it yet, is Blades in the Dark.
I've heard great things about Blades in the Dark.
You talking about the mechanics, and then Jason, you talking about the narrative. I've made this argument, and everybody knows what a fanboy I am, so this is not news to them. It's a game that if you buy the book and you read it and never play it, you will love the hobby more. Now, if you play it, it'll blow your mind.
Sure.
But the book itself really kind of makes you see things differently. And then when you play it changes how you look at the game. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I think about it for Jimmy and for you, Jason, for different reasons. And then for those listening, episode 128 is my interview with McGay and Vincent Baker, the creators of Powered by Apocalypse. So go back to the archive, episode 128.
128, you say.
That'd be worth checking out.
They were wonderful people. So it's great when you come onto someone's podcast and they plug their own shit. It's time to plug your shit. So Jason, super excited about this game right now, where do I need to go?
If you were super excited about Babies and Broadswords, first of all, thank you so much. You can find it linked through our website, Evenfooting Games. It's available on Amazon in the paperback, or we can get you a PDF through DriveThruRPG. There's also a very short demo free to download on DriveThruRPG, as well as multiple character sheets. So if you just want a very, very quick overview of what the book looks like on the inside, check out that demo. Check out the podcast. We do an actual play and a game design podcast all in one. When we first started writing the game, it was very much let's play and then talk about the mechanics that we worked through. So you can see how the game progressed. You can hear it in real time as we talked over the things to work on. So you can find Even Footing Games presents Babies and Broadswords on all of your podcatching apps. And the best thing to do is just check out evenfootinggames.com, because we are prepping and we're working on more stuff right now. We've got a couple of really cool things coming out very soon. We're starting to do modules for Babies and Broadswords based on classic children's literature. We've got one in Winnie the Pooh coming out, where we've actually created six new character classes based on the characters from Winnie the Pooh that works with the original game. So if you've got, this one's going to be definitely more family geared, but we're working on stuff like that. And we've got our second big game in the works right now. We've just started it, and we are really taking kind of the base ideas of Babies and Broadswords, that full holistic body, soul, mind affecting mechanic, and bringing it out. The games are going to be much more as concerned with the psychology of your character, of how things affect them, how they affect you emotionally. We are working on a system that's really going to make the inner adventure be just as important as the outer adventure. Nice. So definitely keep an eye on our stuff for that, because we're going to be releasing some very cool, much more mature, engaging content very, very soon. But for now, buy the book on Amazon and DriveThruRPG.
Perfect. And Jimmy, I heard talk of a Patreon.
We do have a Patreon, and it's because of our awesome Patreon subscribers that we can continue to keep the lights on. Absolutely. We've got several patrons now, and it's been fantastic. And that's just Even Footing Games. You can find us on Patreon and, support us, and we'll get you in one of our games. You can play with the creators. We do those games. I really would like to do some more of those games. So I want some more patrons to come in and support us, and let me be your storyteller. Let Jason be your story, or your sitter. I'm sorry. And your sitter, and be a baby for an hour with us.
Patrons get first dib. They get free dibs at all of the stuff that comes out. You get first crack, and a lot of it is free, especially the PDF stuff. So it's part of check that out. Yeah, we've got a lot of great perks, and it really does. I know a lot of folks will say, hey, we need the patrons to keep the lights on, but it legitimately is true. Folks who are making, Craig, folks who are making these companies kind of starting from the ground up, we live and die on our patrons and their word of mouth. And absolutely. So if you like what we're doing, for God's sakes, please give us a couple bucks a month.
Well,
we'll give you extra stuff.
my stuff.
My audience has heard this a million times, and it's very rare that I get on a soapbox, but this is my soapbox, which is, if you like cool shit, you got to support cool shit or cool shit doesn't get made.
That's
and
right.
It's that simple. So, you know, if you like something, throw them a buck, right? If you buy their book, you know, support them for a buck a month on Patreon. It's the only way we get cool shit. So my listeners are tired of hearing that. So, all right, guys, everything that we talked about is linked below in the show notes. So just scroll down now and you can head right over there to grab it. Jason, it was great talking to you, man.
Oh, I had an absolute blast. So I gotta say one more thing.
Please.
Or Gay will get mad. We are now members of the Independent Gaming Alliance. So if you're going to conventions and you see a booth with IGA, our book will be available there too.
Awesome.
We are doing our part to help our fellow indie game makers.
Yep. Very, but very
thank
cool.
you so much for having me, Craig. I really, really had a blast. Pleasure. Appreciate it.
And Jimmy, don't forget, if you need some more games, you know where to go.
Yeah, I'm going to be reaching out to you very soon.
Beautiful, beautiful. And for those of you who listen to this whole thing, like this is the end and you made it the whole way, I appreciate you too. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Subscribe to Tabletop Talk and share it with your friends. Check out our content on YouTube and Twitch. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and stay updated on everything coming from Third Floor. All the links are in the show notes. Take care, floorheads.
Well, guys, we had just a terrible time getting comfortable and running our mouths and stuff.
it was great. So awkward. Oh, God. Yeah,
no, super, super good. No, super, super good. I appreciate it. So, you know what? If you're sorry, Jason, I think I'm going to go to Jimmy on the mechanics. Is that all right?
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. He's our mechanics guy and our playtester. So
perfect.
I will just sit back and go, uh-huh, every now and then. Yep.
All right, I'll bring us back.
Oh, hey. Are you still here? Wow. Well, the episode is over, but if you're bored, why not go to patreon.com and support the show for as little as $1 a month? Yeah, you can just scroll down and yeah, get the link. It's Patreon that makes this and all of our other content possible. Don't you want to join the other floorheads on the Patreon Discord? Anyway, thanks for sticking around. Take care. Bye.